Well, welcome this morning. If you're visiting with us, we're glad that you are here. Just to orient you to what we're doing and what we're studying, we are making our way through the entire Bible this year. And Sunday mornings during our Bible study, we are having a lesson and discussion over the prior week's readings. And we are doing it and using the Daily Bible. It's a new international version that lays out the entire Bible and places it in chronological order so that we can go through the Bible in that way. This past week, we read from the final half of Job, chapters 22 through 42, a select grouping of Psalms, and then into Daniel chapter 7 and 8. So that's what we're going to be discussing and pulling upon this morning. So we walk through the climax of the book of Job, where Job finishes defending his innocence. And then we heard from a younger man, a younger friend of Job, Elihu. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. If anybody has a better way, that's how. Feel free to use it. I'll gladly adopt it. Elihu. He comes in with his perspective, and we'll take a look at that. And then that's a good kind of a bridge or a lead-in to God weighing in on the matter. And so the Lord himself speaks out of the whirlwind, and I like the term the whirlwind, and we'll talk about that. And that, it changes everything and kind of puts the perspective I think we need to have after going through Job. It sets us right. That's kind of how I would characterize it. But after Job, our readings are carried into a series of songs of lament. And we see a nation crying out during their exile. And they're struggling with the defeats that they're dealing with, the guilt, and juxtaposing that to the promises that God had made to them. And they're struggling and they're trying to make sense of it all. And asking the question that many of us ask when we're suffering and we're dealing with hardships, and that question is why? Why is this happening to me? Why is God allowing this? Why is it going on? Why am I having to suffer when it's not justified? Like, that's a question many of us may ask when we're faced with those types of hardships. And the great thing about our study is that we going through the readings this week, you start to get the answer to that question. Finally, the last part of our readings this week, we get into the book of Daniel with his visions of beasts and thrones and the Son of Man. So I think that's a good capstone reading to the readings that we had throughout the week. Really puts a point on it. So the theme, the main question then, is when suffering it feels unanswered, where do we place our trust? So we're going to walk through that together today. Right, so we started out with Job's final offense, Elihu's speeches, God weighs in the answers, moments of exile, and then Daniel's vision. That's just a run through the structure of what we read this week. So, in Job, so put your mind back into the last half of the book of Job. And we begin with Job's last words before God arrives. And he's got three friends, and that have repeated their charges. And what were the three friends that were ministering or talking to Job? What were they trying to tell him? And how were they helping him? Yeah. Yeah, but what was the problem with that? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, they were claiming that Job, you were suffering, you're, all this is happening to you. It's clear in their eyes that obviously you're sinning. And that's why it's happening. They presumed to have it all figured out. And I think, that their counsel to Job was like Tony said, was turn away and repent, and you can make it stop. And Eliphaz even invents specific sins, accusing Job of oppressing the poor and withholding food. And his other friend, Bildad, declares no one is righteous before God, which not true. But what's the real problem, though, with what they were saying and how they were saying it? Yeah.
Well, they were very prideful. I mean, they knew a lot of things. Like Jason preached a couple of weeks ago, you could know it, but you need to be humble. And somebody once told me, you need to have a heart like Jesus. And I didn't understand what he was saying. And then, you could know it, right? Or know it and everything else like that. But what they were doing was, they thought they knew it all.
Yeah.
So,
It's very dangerous to presume you know why God is doing something. Bad things happen, suffering happens. Tony. No. Things are going to happen. Good people are going to experience suffering. What we have to be careful of is not presuming we know why that is happening. And we know the mind of God, that because we can know what God reveals to us. I mean, we have the Word, and we can use that, and we're called to. But beyond that, the answer isn't there in the Word about why something is happening. Then we can't presume to know why. Tony, go ahead.
We don't know that for sure or anything, but I always wonder about that because they're just going with the dominant thinking of the time and everything here. It's like, God's going to bless you if you're righteous, and if you're not, then you're going to suffer. And maybe this is where the reality is what you said before. And maybe this is hope. I always kind of wonder if this has been a revelation of Job that made him think about, okay, I need to rethink the way I was thinking.
Right.
I wasn't in tune totally with God the way I thought I was. And his friends aren't seeing that. They should be coming to him instead of assuming and presuming sin. wrong? What have you done? And when they tell him, and when he's telling them, I haven't done anything. I can't understand why this happened to me. Instead of just saying, well, that can't be the case, obviously, because of the wrong. Then they should be rethinking the way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all good points. The friend's logic is fairly straightforward, that if you're suffering, then obviously there's something you're guilty of. It's kind of a cause and effect between sin and suffering. So if they're suffering, then there must be sin. I mean, we know that's not necessarily true. Job's defense, he insists that he's innocent, as Tony had said, and longs for God's hearing in Job 23 through 24. Then he gives a detailed defense in chapter 31. And you know, it's clear, you know, that he is a righteous man, Job, and his heart is clearly aligned with God's. He's just trying to make sense of what's happening to him. Then he's a man of integrity, and true integrity is faithfulness before God, not public approval. That's what matters. So ultimately, the opinions of his friends really don't matter at all. What matters is his relationship with God. And only God knows, one, his heart, his true nature, knows where he's fallen short and where he sinned. And only God knows why things are happening the way they're happening. Because God's mind is eternal, and it existed before time and it expands beyond it. And so things will happen to us in our lives that to us are inexplicable. But to God, they are serving a purpose that spans well beyond what we can see or how we are living. Yeah. Prosper. Yeah. I mean, in the same note, if somebody is prosperous, you could say, oh, well, they're obviously right with God, right? Like, how blessed they are, which that is obviously not the case. Anybody else? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely a lot to consider. And I think as we go through it, we'll get to where the logical conclusion And the point of Job, you know, the way it wraps up, and then into the Psalms, all of it starts to become revealed. So we have Eliphaz. He paints Job as a wicked oppressor. To Job in chapter 23, he longs to find God, but God seems hidden to him. And then in 31, he makes a defense for himself. He declares or swears an oath of innocence, listing out the things that he's done. He's been upright. He cared for the poor. He kept pure. You know, even though his friends accuse him of suffering, prove your sin, Job declares his innocence. So what do we know about that, though? And how do we know that just because you're suffering doesn't mean you're guilty of something? How do we know that's true? Yeah. Because of 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18, Christ also suffered the righteous for the unrighteous, and in Hebrews 4, verse 15, where Jesus was tempted in every way but without sin. And so, in a way, Job is about Jesus. It's pointing to Jesus, and starting to help God's people understand and condition them to this truth, and pointing towards Christ while he's doing it. So Elihu, is that how we say it? Anybody? Elihu, that's what I'm going to say it. So Elihu comes into the picture. There's some heated back and forth steps that are going on between his three friends, and then Elihu comes in. He's younger. He's been quiet, but he is fired up, ready to go. To get after this with Job and his friends. And he believes his friends have failed to answer Job, and that Job has gone too far in justifying himself instead of God. And we see it, you know, it's a good bridge, kind of, as I mentioned before, between what the three friends were saying and then what the Lord is going to weigh in on. But what's the difference between Elihu's message compared to the other three friends? How is it different? What's his perspective there? Yeah, no, that's a good perspective. It's kind of there is wisdom that comes with maturity and experience. But there's cons to that too, where you can kind of go off track, where you can think, just because I've got all this experience and perspective and lived, that I've got it figured out, and that's a danger. And it's possible that a youthful person can speak truth and wisdom, and shouldn't be discounted. If anybody has taught upstairs, you've experienced it from our teenagers. They are wise and can understand the truth and share that. And so Elihu is one of them. He's frustrated. He's angry at Job for justifying himself instead of God. And makes a suggestion in Job 33, verses 19 through 30. And what is his suggestion there? About the possibility of what the suffering is. Yeah, so it's a type of discipline or refinement or correction or help. There's a lot of reasons why you could be experiencing suffering. And what do we know about God's discipline from the New Testament? And why we as God's people may experience it. Yeah, reflects His love. Yeah, Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 7, we can see that God disciplines those He loves. And so, to experience that discipline is to experience God's love, even though it doesn't feel good. May not like it at the time. It is good for us, and God sees it as such. What about Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5? Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5, we see that suffering produces something. It produces perseverance. It produces character and hope. So there's goodness that comes through experiencing suffering and experiencing God's discipline. Because those are all great things. We want those things. We want perseverance. We want to be men and women of character. And we want to have God's hope. So Elihu magnifies God's greatness in storms and creation in Job 36 and 37. So we get a righteous rebuke from Elihu. He gives a new perspective on the debate. He chimes in. We see that it's potentially discipline, not punishment, and that suffering as divine discipline and refinement isn't necessarily a punishment for sin. And God is great. God's power and wisdom, we see that in 36 and 37. All of which is helping prepare Job for what he's about to experience in the following section. And so something just to keep in mind is that when we kind of to put a bow on this, when we suffer, it may be part of God's plan and His refining work for us, all of which are preparing, or could be preparing us for something greater. So there is a purpose for it. We might not see it, but we have to have faith and confidence in knowing that God has a plan. And He does, and He's working in our lives. Yep.
All appears with the justice of Christ, so that each of
Yep. God is a perfect judge, and justice will be served. We know that. So God gives a response from the whirlwind. And I like whirlwind. It's from the Hebrew word S-E-A-R-A-H, say Arah, which means whirlwind or tempest. And so this is the moment that Job has been begging for. God shows up and offers a perspective. But it doesn't happen in the calm. It doesn't happen in some quiet reasoning in a quiet way. And Job 38:1 tells us, "Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm." So a storm or a whirlwind or a violent tempest. So this isn't a calm, quiet talking to. It's God in His power, in His might. And so this isn't the first time that God has revealed Himself in this way. We see Ezekiel saw God's glory in a storm in Ezekiel 1 verse 4. Nahum wrote, "His way is in the whirlwind and the storm," in Nahum 1 verse 3. Elijah saw God's power in the wind, quake, and the fire before hearing His gentle voice in 1 Kings 19, 11 through 12. So the whirlwind shows God's overwhelming majesty, but it also shows His nearness. He comes to Job personally, and what He gives Job, though, is not an explanation, it's more of a revelation, right? He's not giving him the answer he's asking for, but He's giving him much more. And I find that pretty amazing. So then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. And we see it. So, Job stands as an innocent sufferer, pointing us to God. So how does Job answer? How does God answer Job? And how does Job respond there in Job 38? Yeah. In Job 38, verse 4, he asks a question. What's the question? Yeah. I read that in my way is, I don't know how to say how I read it. I take it as, look, calm yourself. You don't know anything. I've been around since the beginning. You weren't there. You don't know. It's how I interpret it in my mind. That's what's going on inside my head. I don't know if that's how you should read it, but that's I put myself I check myself. That's kind of how I see it. It's very much more than that. It's just because it's God here speaking. Where were you when I laid Earth's foundation? I was there from the beginning. And he goes on to describe creation, the constellations, the wild animals, leviathans, behemoth. The point, though, for Job is that he can't comprehend or understand the universe, but God can. And the point for us is neither can we. We try to figure it out and we study it, but the more we learn about the world, the more we find out how little we know. And that has been the true from the beginning, and it will be true forever. Because of the point of all of this is we can't know and understand God and His plan. It is beyond our own comprehension, beyond what He's revealed to us and allowed us to understand. So that's the question that he leads off with. And the lesson here then is why versus who. So Job asks, why am I suffering? And God, what? He never gives the why. Instead, what he does, though, is reveal who he is. And he is the creator, the sustainer, and the sovereign. So Job doesn't get his explanation, but he learns about God. And God shows himself to him in that way and reminds him of his power. So the conclusion then for us from that would be that peace doesn't come from knowing the reason. It comes from trusting the revealer. It comes from trusting God and putting our trust in Him. So in chapter 42, verse 3, what's Job's response to this? He says, surely I spoke of things I did not understand. And then he says in 42, verse 5, my ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. So it's clear that Job took in what the Lord had revealed to him, and he's starting to realize that he was wrong. And he didn't completely get it. And that's how often are we in that same situation where we think we've got it figured out, yet the Word hits us to our core and reveals a truth to us that we hadn't yet understood or had refused to see. We realize it had always been there, but in our own pride, we chose to not see it. So Job starts to see. His eyes and his ears are open here. And in chapter 42, verse 6, what does Job do? Yeah, he repents in humility. Repents and humility, dust and ashes. And so what does God do for Job at this point? At the end.
What's that?
Restores him. Yeah. He restores his fortunes and vindicates him before his friends. He sets all things right. And it's not just restoring him to his previous state. What is it? It's even greater than what he had before. Riches and family, well beyond what he had previously been blessed with, because he was very blessed prior to all this happening. So what's the connection here to Jesus? How do we see Jesus in all of this? How does it point to Jesus? Yeah.
I think the other thing that I see is, and I don't know, I mean, I look at God's response to
jealous for the fact that now when I cry out to God that I have an intermediary, that I'm not going straight to the Father that created all of the things as this almighty perspective. I now have Jesus who also created all these things, but has been come down and been created and lived and suffered and cried out, and now he stands between me and God to adjudicate my faith.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. So Job meets God in the whirlwind. Just as Jesus reveals God face to face. In Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, it says the radiance of God's glory. So Jesus is described as that. And we see at the cross, Jesus didn't explain suffering. He entered into it. And so the answer to Job's why question is really God's who, right? It's Jesus, the Son of Man. So how does this help us when we face suffering that makes no sense, that's inexplicable? Yep. Yeah, and I think the lesson for us, kind of to your point, is what is more important for faith? Is it understanding the reason why or knowing the revealer? Yeah, Trinae. No, very good. Excellent point. Yep.
The challenge to me, in America, living in the West in our age, is that we think we can read all these questions from God and say, why should we know the answer to that? How does this happen? How does this happen? Because we know more about the scientific laws that God sustains the universe with. We think we have a
Yeah, good, good point. And we can all think back to times when some of that safety that you're describing, Wade, was there was kinks in that armor. It was stripped away a little bit. And we were faced with the reality that maybe we're a lot more vulnerable than we had thought. And how do we react, and how did you deal with that in light of these scriptures? Yeah. That's a good point. They were good. Jason, did you want something? I could tell.
Learning to trust in Him, what we can't see, what we heard, and what we don't understand.
Yeah, amen. So we're quickly running out of time, and that's okay. I think we had a good discussion. It transitioned into the Psalms, and we see the Israelites in their exile laying out, trying to understand the same thing that Job is understanding, is why, Lord? They protest their innocence, and they confess their sins. But all of them look to God for mercy and all of it. So it's a good study in seeing a people struggling with trying to live in a world where things are happening and then trying to make sense of it. And examining themselves throughout. And I think that's what we see them doing, is looking internally and examining themselves to try to understand what is happening, and am I doing everything right in the eyes of God? And then at the same time, reaching out and relying on God for hope and strength and understanding, and putting our hope and trust in Him. And that's our call to. So I think we're done reading the final letter. Thank you.